The Canadian Football Hall of Fame is out with its induction class for the year 2021, and we are pleased to be joined by the person I would argue is the headliner of the list. He is the former head coach of the Buffalo Bills, the team that went to four consecutive Super Bowls in the early 1990s, and prior to that, and hence his induction into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame, the former head coach of the Montreal Alouettes for five seasons in the mid-70s, during which he won two Grey Cups. We welcome to the program the great Marv Levy. Mark, thanks for your time this morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and I appreciate your kind comments. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to the great fans there, and I hope they're all doing well during this terrible coronavirus pandemic campaign, and that we conquer it, too.
Absolutely. So let's kick off with your time in Montreal from 1973 to 1977. 5 years, you win two Grey Cups, 74 and 77. You've come from the NFL, where you were a special teams coordinator. What was the adjustment to Canadian football like for you, and what led you to come north of the border?
Okay, well, very interesting. Yes, I spent 5 years there out of a 47-year-long coaching career, but they sure were memorable years in many ways. I hadn't known much about it before I arrived up there. But through a bunch of my previous coaching career in the States, in college, and with some of the pro teams, there was a scout for the Montreal Alouettes, who later became their general manager, I should say, named J.I. Albrecht. And he used to come to the practices where I was coaching, and we struck up a friendship. And apparently he was favorably impressed with my coaching. And we had just gone to the Super Bowl in the 1972 season when I was with the Washington Redskins. And he recommended the Montreal Alouettes team owner, Sam Berger, that he interview me for the position. I was glad to go up and be interviewed. I was enamored with the city, with the history of it, with Mr. Berger, his young family, and all the people I met. And when they offered me the job, I took it. There was a lot to learn. I realized that. The rules are different, the size of the field different, how many men in motion and what all that. But you got to make you're making adjustments all the time as a coach, and I'm sure in every other profession as well.
How did that experience help you get back to head coaching in the NFL? Because you were, like you said, you're an assistant coach with Washington the year before. You go to the Super Bowl, then you go coach in Montreal, and then come back to the NFL. How did that whole experience in Canada, help you become a great NFL coach?
Well, again, I had been an assistant in the NFL for a while. My last 3 years under a great coach who's a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, George Allen. And I learned a lot, but going up to Canada to become a head coach, you experience some wonderful things. You realize that the popularity of the game is dependent on three almost equally important components. One, the participants, players and coaches. Two, the fans who get, and three, the media that conveys that between them all. And so, but I learned a lot. I learned how much you have to adapt to the situation. So many different rules. Jokingly speaking, when J.A. Albrecht offered me the job, he said, "Marv, you can have 12 men on the field. In Canada, there are only 11, of course, as everybody knows, in U.S. football." And I said, "Oh, great, okay." And after my first game, I walked into J.A.'s office and said, "Jay, you didn't tell me the other team could have 12 men, too." Well, so what?
Yeah. And how many times, you got to make quick adjustments, Marv. There's no question about it. But how many times were you able to go outside the box because you had that extra guy? What kind of adjustments did you make? How creative were you able to be, perhaps in ways that you hadn't been before?
Well, first of all, there is a lot to learn when you go up there, but something I found out very soon and that pervaded all the time I was there, whether it was in the Canadian League or coaching in the U.S., was this. It takes, even though there are differences in the rules and you have to adapt to it, you're always making adjustments. The game always changes. The nature of the game always changes. But I did realize that whether you're playing in the U.S. or in Canada, if you run, throw, block, tackle, catch, kick better than your opponent, you're going to win most of the time. Fundamentals. You have to, teaching fundamentals is the most important thing. Not the strategies and what formation you're running and if you're in a no huddle or what. Those things, you make them work. But if you can't handle the fundamentals better than your opponent, you're not going to win.
Marv Levy is our guest, and he is now a member of the Canadian Football Hall of Fame class of 2021, one-time head coach of the Montreal Alouettes, and of course the head coach of the Buffalo Bills from the mid-80s until the late 90s. You're listening to Leadoff, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
What were some of your most memorable moments coaching in Buffalo?
Well, how much warm clothes I had to put on towards the end of the season. Well, I came to Buffalo, and the weather was rough there. So when the team owner, Ralph Wilson, a wonderful guy, offered me the job, he said, Marv, there are two seasons here in Buffalo. He said, the 4th of July and winter. And I learned what great fans there were. They were so supportive, even when we lost those Super Bowl games, how supportive they were. I once had told them in a huge meeting downtown that you are the reason we'll go back to the Super Bowl. Great fans there, and possibly you know this, but about 20% of the fan base that came to our games when I was with the Buffalo Bills did come from Canada, across the borders.
And that is still true to this day, Marv. I mean, there's a huge Bills fan contingent around the Golden Horseshoe. And, of course, for a few years, the Bills would play one home game each year in the Rogers Centre here in Toronto.
Right.
When you look back on your days as the head coach of the Bills, I want to get to the Super Bowls in just a moment, but one of the regular season rivalries that obviously stands out of the AFC East is Buffalo-Miami. I know people who are newer to the game or younger are going to say, well, where do the New England Patriots fit into this? They came a little after your run. But Buffalo-Miami, Jim Kelly, Dan Marino, Marv Levy, Don Shula. I mean, you must look back on that time and just think, wow. I mean, when you're living it, you're feeling the pressure, but you look back. I mean, those were some epic, epic games twice a year.
Yes, they were. And I was competing against another head coach for whom I had such high regard. Don Shula and I, he passed away just about a year or so ago, remained good friends. I had great regard for him. We exchanged many communications. But he was the essence, the winningest coach of all time in the NFL, of course. And he taught clean football. He honored the game. And our fans in both places were not abusive. The fans, yes, they competed strongly with each other, and I'm sure they had great fans. We did, too. I can't tell you how many times I've been in airports all around the country, and someone will come up to me and say, I'm the number one Buffalo Bills fan. And finally, I had to say one day, I've never met the number two Buffalo Bills fan. But that happened.
4 times you go to the Super Bowl between 1990 and 93. What were those years like? Because just getting to the big dance is so tough. And as a fan, as a Bills fan, just my team getting there is I'd be happy with, right? How many teams don't even, have a shot at it? Was that tough after the first couple where you're like, okay, we get there the first year, doesn't happen, second year. Was there added pressure those third and fourth years?
Well, the reason, one of the main reasons we did wasn't just the ability on our team, it was the character of the members on our team. And I can remember the day I was interviewed for the head coaching job, general manager Bill Polian, my wonderful friend now too, sitting in the office with team owner Ralph Wilson, for whom I have great regard. We all, I don't know who suggested it or brought the subject up, but we all decided we would bring a board on our team only people of high character. Now, their personalities might differ. Some might be extroverts, some introverts, but did they show up for work on time? Did they not blame their teammates? Did they work hard on fundamentals? Were they good citizens? Those were the only kind of guys we brought onto our team. Once in a rare while, we might have made a mistake, but we didn't keep a guy like that very long. So this is one of the reasons we bounced back. That plus, as I say, the tremendous support we got from the Buffalo Bills. So many of them just kept, you know, cheering us back on despite the bitterness of losing those games. I do recall one. There's an exception to every rule on a radio show I used to do a day or two after the game, and when we lost, I think our second Super Bowl. One fan calling in and saying, "Coach, please don't go back to the Super Bowl. I can't stand it. It hurts. It's killing me." I said, "Sir, I understand your anguish, but I'm glad you're not on my team."
Great line. You know, Ziggy and I had the opportunity. This was obviously before the pandemic. It was the kickstart to the 2019 NFL season, if I remember correctly. Daryl Talley came into studio with Ziggy and me. And I'll tell you, Marv, if Daryl Talley had told me to go out and fly a plane, I got no business being a pilot, but he could have motivated me to do it. I mean, you talk about high character guys, just the 20-minute conversation we had with him that day, man, oh man, that guy was a warrior in the middle of your defense.
That's true, and I used to say about Daryl, he not only had character, he was a character. I tell you, I don't know if you got a word in edgewise when he was there. But he was a great leader on our team, Daryl, and he was a different personality, very entertaining in many ways, and I still stay in touch with him from time to time.
Who's somebody that impacted you as a coach, either a coaching clinic, seminar, or somebody you worked under?
Well, George Allen, certainly. I was an assistant to George in the NFL. And he was a magnificent leader. He did focus on fundamentals. George never used a swear word in his life. It was always dad drat it or something like that if he got upset. But he was a great teacher. And then when I was just a young college coach, even an assistant beginning in college, I went one summer to a clinic all over the country where the most outstanding college football coach in the country, Bud Wilkinson, was speaking. And about the sixth one I went to, he looked down to you and said, "Are you here again?" And he said, "Come here." He invited me up to his room. He invited me to their practices. I got to know him. He was another guy who, what a football coach, what a man of high character, had great impact on my coaching career.
Marv Levy is our guest. He is going into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame class of 2021. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Just a couple of more items regarding the four Super Bowls, Marv. Scott Norwood always got a bum rap. I mean, I can understand criticism of a guy who misses a chip shot, 27, 28, 30-yard field goal the last second. I get it. I mean, that would be tough in and of itself, but I'd understand it more. Scott Norwood missed a 47-yard field goal wide right. All the flack he took, how hard was that for you, the team, to experience, and how did you rally to his side?
Well, yeah, okay, that's a great story. What people don't know is Scott was with us for two of our Super Bowls, the first two. And, yes, he missed that kick, and we lost the game, and I'll come back to it in a minute. But there were, during that season, six games that we won in the dying seconds when Scott kicked the winning field goal. Okay, back to the loss, the wide right 47-yard field goal with just 8 seconds left to play. We arrived back in Buffalo, and when we arrived there, we were supposed to go back to our facility and we had a final team meeting. But instead, the buses took us to downtown Buffalo into, golly, I can't remember the name of the square. We were ushered into a city hall building, out onto the balcony, and down below were 30,000 people welcoming us home after the loss and cheering the team, and wait till next year, they were chanting. And then they started to chant, "We want Scott. We want Scott. We want Scott." Scott stepped up. He's a rather quiet, soft-spoken guy. But he did say, he looked down, and he said, "You are the reason we will be going back to the Super Bowl next year." And in the following, and in both those Super Bowls we went to, as I may have said already, Scott kicked the winning points on the way to him in several games.
That's I remember the city rallying around him. I also remember all those people saying, you know, how do you miss a field goal like that? It just always stunned me. The cool thing for us Canadians, Marv, is that after Scott left the Bills, Steve Christie, who's from the GTA, Oakville, came in and kicked for you guys and did a great job. What made Jim Kelly great?
What made Jim Kelly? Well, certainly his character, his raw ability, and his teammates, and a family. He was one of six brothers, several of them very good football players. He had great parents. I met them. But Jim Kelly, he had raw ability, but he was tougher than 47 miles of detour. He could bounce back. He had the greatest backup quarterback that ever played the game that helped push him forth in Frank Reich, now an outstanding coach at the Indianapolis Colts. But there were so many things. Jim Kelly had character. He's now a wonderful father and husband, still living in Buffalo. Funny thing, Jim had not wanted to be drafted. He went to school down at the University of Miami, even though he's from Pittsburgh. He had not wanted to go to pro football in Buffalo. He didn't like the weather, he said. And after about 10 years there, Jim Kelly said, "No one ever wants to come to Buffalo," he said. "And once they get here, no one ever wants to leave." He hasn't left. He's still there.
All right, I got to ask you something personal. At turning 96, you sound great. I've seen you do media interviews on some U.S. networks. What's your secret?
Well, really, I never did drugs. I smoked so briefly, you know, just a few cigars, and I gave that up. Any drinking I do is very moderate. As Dean Martin once said, he drinks moderately. He just ordered a case of moderately today, but I won't say that one. surrounded by great family, starting with my parents, my wife, my children, my whole family. I have a huge family. My father was one of 13 children. So I got a cousin. I can't go anywhere downtown here in Chicago for a walk without someone stopping me and saying, "I married your cousin Jerry's granddaughter Sylvia." Yeah, okay, fine.
Last one for you, Marvin. I'm going to cop that this is almost grotesquely personal because we're in Toronto, not in Chicago. But I know you're a Chicago native. I happen to have been and still am a Chicago Cubs fan for my entire life. You were at, prior to 2016, the last World Series game at Wrigley Field in 1945. What do you remember of that particular day, and how much did it mean to you that the Chicago Cubs, after 108 years, exorcised that demon in 2016?
Well, I'll tell you, yes, I grew up a Cubs fan. I loved the Cubs growing up, but now, and the Cubs have been to two World Series in 08 and then 29 and 32 and 35 and 38. They'd lost them all. But World War II has just ended. I was in the Army Air Corps, home on furlough, still hadn't been discharged, home on furlough, and I'm sitting with my friend, Herb Melnick's his name, in his home in Chicago listening to game number 6. The Cubs were down 3-2. The Cubs won the game. Now it's going to be game number 7 the next day. No night baseball then. Herb and I rushed down the Wrigley Field hoping to buy tickets for the game. We got in line. The line was 8 blocks long, I think. And but some Cubs personnel, front office, came walking down the line, everybody in uniform. And Herb and I were still in uniform. We're just home on furlough. They moved up to the front of the line. We bought the tickets. They cost 55 cents then to see the 7th game of the World Series. And when the Cubs lost the game, we're walking out after the game, and Herb, who was a character, start yelling, "Wait till next year! Wait till next year!" Well, that's what we did from 1945 until 2016. And finally, the Cubs got back there, and they invited me to come to one of the World Series home games and lead the singing of the national anthem. And I was asked to write a book, which I did, for children called Go Cubs Go, which was a fictional type of history of the Chicago Cubs. Boy, you got a long-winded answer for that one.
Hey, I loved every word of it. Listen, sir, it's an absolute honor to speak to you, and Ziggy and I both congratulate you on this honor, a long time coming, 2021 Canadian Football Hall of Fame inductee. A wonderful first 95 years. Here's to 95 more.
Thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure talking with you and communicating with your listeners and the fine fans up there. Thank you.